All right. Well, good morning and welcome back to those of you who were here yesterday. I recognize some faces, and welcome to those of you who didn't come yesterday and this is your first day with me in the Boundary Seminar. And if you're wondering, oh, did I miss out on, is this not going to make sense to me because I wasn't here? No, every week I have people who come to, some people come to both days, some people come to one and not the other, and that's absolutely fine. So you should still be able to get something out of today, even if you weren't here yesterday. Yesterday we looked at kind of what do we mean when we say boundaries, because everyone kind of has different ideas of what that could look like. We talked about we actually didn't quite get to different categories of boundary violations, but that's okay, because every group's different. I might quickly go through that today. Today, I really want to get into the practicalities of, okay, so how do we do this? How do we, sometimes the biggest part of the battle is knowing what the boundaries should be and when it's okay to put them in and when maybe it's not. And that's not always this cut and dry, easy thing. And so I'm going to give you guys some frameworks to use to help with that. But, you know, I can't exactly tell you what's right for you, right? I believe that everyone is the boss of their own lives and that you are all experts on your lives, and I am not, even though I have a degree and a license and all that. That doesn't make me the expert of your life. but I hope today I can give you kind of some questions to use and some frameworks to view the situations you're facing through that can kind of help you come to those conclusions more easily. So that's my goal. And I ended class with a song yesterday, so I'd like to start today with a song. Yesterday the song was called Save Myself by Ed Sheeran. Today this song is called Rescue You by Johnny Swim. And I'm sorry, this video doesn't have the lyrics up, so last week when I played this, someone from next door came and said, your music's too loud, we can't hear. And so I want to respect that and not have it be too loud, so I hope that you guys can hear the words. I want to respect their boundary. It's very valid.
Thank you.
Okay. So again, that's Johnny Swim. They're awesome. They're a married couple. Awesome musicians. So as you were listening to that song, what were things that you noticed, or what were maybe some lines or concepts that stood out to you when it comes to that might be connected to the issue of boundaries? Right. I know for me, when I hear that, sometimes like I'm like, but no, we want to fix people. And I was actually just writing, I'm going to start a blog, and I was writing about that this morning, actually. And I had a professor who used to say, people are not pipes and we are not plumbers. We don't fix people. Because so many people, they go to therapy because they think it's going to fix them. It's like, no. That's not what we're here for. Because who am I to say what the fixed version of you looks like? Only God knows that. I don't know that. So just loving someone may not fix them. Love is so powerful. And I think being loved by someone unconditionally is so healing and great. But yeah, just love alone isn't always it. And I kind of love this song because pop music today, my sister and I joke about codependent love songs, where it's like, you know, people are like, all I need is your love, and without you I will die. And it's like, no, you will not. You will not die without that person. Like, it will be hard, but ultimately you probably will be fine one day. But so I just laugh, and I used to work with teenagers, solely teenagers, and I would just be like, oh my gosh, what is happening in your brains as you listen to this, like your expectations for relationships. So anyway, so I love this song that kind of says like, no, my love can't ultimately rescue you. Maybe it can help you, maybe it can be the support, give you this sense of security, but ultimately it can't rescue you. So anything else that stood out to anyone? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure most of us at some point in our life have experienced wanting something for someone more than they want it for themselves, and maybe, you know, trying to urge them on, push them, and so maybe we realize like, oh, I can't make them do this, or they have to want it for themselves. Maybe we never realize that. Maybe you're realizing it right now. I don't know. But yeah, to not beat ourselves up that we've done that, because I think it often does come from a place of love and caring. And yesterday we did talk a little bit about the discomfort with acknowledging our own powerlessness in those situations, that we really can't control another person, even if I use the metaphor of I'm watching someone walk towards a cliff and I'm screaming at them, there's a cliff. But they have their earbuds in and they're not listening to me. And I can't go tackle them so they don't fall off the cliff. So that can be really hard and really scary when we think, wow, this person's like headed for something really hard, and we want to shield the people we love from that, but we can't always do that, and that is a hard place to be. Yeah,
I said. Uh-huh.
Exactly. And when they're younger, you know, you have more power and control. But as they get older, that's often. Yes.
But look, guys, no, actually, they do remember and they do hear everything you say. Mm-hmm. I mean, and a lot of times they do come back and say, you're right. You know, but
yep.
They have to learn on their own. They just have to.
Ultimately, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and for parents, I was just thinking about this today, that so often, like, parents get shamed for what's going on with their kids, and sometimes there is some parent responsibility, but also your child is a unique individual, and just because you birthed that child doesn't mean it's going to be just like you. It's crazy how even siblings, you know, my sister and I are so different in so many ways, but we were born to the same parents, we grew up in the same house, but we are such different people. And I think a lot of times parents have this pressure, you know, like if my kid does something bad, it's going to reflect on me, which to some degree there may be truth in that, but I think that can really become, I think, like mom shaming is such a thing nowadays, where, you know, you're wrong for feeding your child this, you're wrong for not feeding your child that, you're wrong for doing this with your child, you're wrong for not doing that with your child. And it's so not helpful. And so I think a lot of times parents feel this, I need to control and micromanage my child because I don't want it to reflect poorly on me. And so then I'm not a parent, but I'm putting myself in your shoes. So as parents, we need to manage our own discomfort and our own insecurities with that, right? But yes, that's really hard. That's a hard transition from child where you do have this control to them becoming an adult. And it's not a super straightforward and smooth process. So, and I saw your hand, yes.
Yes, and sometimes, especially if we have an area in which we feel a lot of guilt anyway, your kids are really good at learning how to manipulate that.
They can be.
We're talking about the manipulation of guilt, and I think it starts with 4.5-year-olds, all right? Mm. We're just speaking from experience right here.
Yeah.
And then they get better at it.
Mm-hmm. They certainly can.
Yes, and they can play one parent against the other.
Mm-hmm. Playing the numbers is what I like to call that. Mom says no. Yeah, oh, grandma's big guns. Yeah, get grandma in there. Yeah, and I think that's reflected in this song that you're blaming history, you're blaming me, but you are your own worst enemy. And yesterday, for those of you who weren't here, we talked about having boundaries is letting other people be responsible for their own lives and taking responsibility for our lives. And so that when there's guilt tripping, when someone says, well, you're not helping me with this, remember we also talked yesterday about the difference between a burden in that Bible verse that says bear one another's burdens, but everyone should bear his own load. That burden is that thing that happens in your life that's overwhelming, maybe an accident, an illness, someone loses a job, whereas that load is that normal daily life responsibilities. And so, you know, I'm assuming that these guys writing this song were dealing with someone who was wanting them to kind of take on their responsibilities, not something where it's like, oh no, this is too much for me to handle and I really need that help. So I'm assuming that they're experiencing some of that guilt tripping and that blaming. And this is a song that I sing to myself when I feel that guilt, because I'm putting up a boundary. Putting up boundaries does not always feel good. And so I think I want to say that because I talk about how much freedom comes from having boundaries, but it can also be a very painful process. And I definitely had times where I wept when I held a boundary because I felt so guilty, but I would be singing the song in my head. I'd be asking friends who were very supportive of me and who I felt had a good view of the situation. I'd ask them for that feedback of, you know, am I out of line here? Is this appropriate? Because I needed that support. So that is one thing I will say to you as you think about setting boundaries is who are people in your life who can support you in that, who you think really understand your situation and know you well, so that they can give you, you know, accurate feedback on, you know, that boundary actually seems kind of harsh and a little extreme, or saying, no, I think you're completely right to do that. And of course, at the end of the day, you're making that decision. So again, don't make it someone else's responsibility to decide what your boundaries are. But sometimes when you're starting this off and it's uncomfortable to do it, it's helpful to have another voice encouraging you and saying, no, this is okay. It's okay to say no. That's why I often say to people, it's okay to ask, because I can say no if I don't want to do it. So I'll encourage people, or if I ask something of someone and I can tell they like kind of want to say no but feel bad, I'll just say, you're allowed to say no. And just to encourage people, like, yeah, it's okay. Because if we're not used to saying no or setting boundaries, it can be very uncomfortable. So it's good to have people who can support you in that. So even now, think of who might some of those people be? And maybe no one's coming to your mind. So I would pray for you that there would be someone who could do that for you, even if it's sometimes I'm the only person in someone's life who can do that for them as their therapist, until, you know, they grow and maybe they make more supportive relationships and friendships. So how do we lovingly set boundaries for the sake of ourselves, but also for the sake of others? Because remember, it's not all about us. When we fail to set appropriate boundaries, we can be left feeling used, trampled on, and that usually leads to some feelings of resentment, anger, that can really get in the way of our loving relationships and really caring for people well. And so yesterday I shared this, and it's from the book, but the idea that poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. This also kind of goes back to responsibility. As you're faced with a situation, getting clear on, like, what is your responsibility, what's your job description, and what is not. And I say job description generally, but it could be with work, because this could come into play in your family, in your job, in your ministry, in volunteering. It couldn't come up in anything. So thinking through, well, what is my responsibility? Is it my responsibility? I always share this example. I used to work for a church, and I helped run our Sunday gatherings. And I'd be in the office Monday through Thursday. And so our head pastor, our worship pastor, we would all have a meeting. We'd set what Sunday was going to look like. And they would often text me at like 10 p.m. on Saturday night with a last-minute request. And, you know, I was in my early 20s. Boundaries were not a thing in my life. And I felt obligated to respond to that and to fill that request, even though it was Saturday night, it was my day off, and even though I was available to them for 4 whole days. And so I would do it. And then sometimes I'd be at a party, sometimes I'd be, you know, out with friends, and then I'd have to pull myself out of that to do that. And how do you think I started feeling towards those people? No. Yeah, not super warm and fuzzy, right? And so then I realized what was going on. It took me a while to realize. It took me being in line for the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland and texting and emailing from there to be like, this is inappropriate. I requested this time off of work. And why am I? And the situation was the worship pastor had an opportunity to go to this thing, so he wanted me to communicate to everyone that practice was going to be changed so he could go and do this. And it's like, wait, I'm the one who planned ahead. I'm the one who got the time off. You're the one who's making this last-minute decision. This is not my responsibility. But unfortunately, I didn't realize that till after I had done it. But what I did was I asked to have a conversation with him, and I shared that, and it improved our relationship. And I love this man. He's not at my church anymore, but I still, you know, he leads at another church, but I'll go and sing with him. I love him as my brother in Christ. And so, but if I hadn't had that conversation and set that boundary, I would probably still be resenting him. And so, but it took me a while to realize that. So again, grace, have grace on yourselves. So it was not my responsibility to fulfill those last-minute needs. My responsibility was, anything you ask of me Monday through Thursday, I will do and have ready for you on Sunday. If you ask me after 6 p.m. on Thursday, it is your responsibility. So, and it took a while of them still texting me on Saturday night and not responding for them to get it. But I had to say, no, I have told them what my boundary is. This shouldn't be a surprise to them that I don't respond. And I told them that. I was like, if you ask me for something work-related outside of this time, I'm not going to respond, just so you know. And they still texted me, but I had to follow through, and I ignored them. And then they stopped eventually. So sometimes your boundaries need to be with your words and your actions, sometimes just your actions, you know, sometimes just within your own heart and knowing for yourself what you're going to do. So that's an example of what's my responsibility and what's not. Also, in order to set boundaries, we need to be aware of, you know, our needs, our desires, our values, our priorities, and our feelings. So feelings are so important, and I got into it a little bit yesterday because I got so excited. Feelings are so important because they signal to us. So, you know, when I'm waiting in line for Indiana Jones, I feel myself getting really stressed out and really angry. What do you think that was telling me? Like, what would you guess? If I'm feeling anger, what are my emotions communicating to me? What, everyone's saying it really quietly. That what was happening wasn't okay. Yeah. Yeah, at least with me. Maybe for someone else, did you say something different?
I was just gonna say you didn't know what your boundaries were and how to set them.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times when we feel anger or resentment, it's because someone has crossed a boundary line. And sometimes we don't even know, that's how we find out, oh, that must be my boundary. So sometimes we work backwards. Sometimes we don't really know where we need to set boundaries, but then we're like, oh, that made me really angry. What about that made me angry? Oh, because I got this time off and it wasn't respected. He treated me as if I was still in the office. Oh, that must be a boundary that when I'm on vacation, I'm not expected to do work. Great, now I know what my boundary is. So sometimes we need to use our feelings as those guideposts. And feelings, they serve a purpose. And there are no inappropriate or wrong feelings. And sometimes this can be tricky for us as Christians. You know, for me, I did not acknowledge that I got angry until I was 27 years old. I thought, no, I don't get angry. I'm fine. Whenever people say they're fine, I'm like, uh-huh. Sure you are. And I have a horrible poker face, so when I'm not fine, it's so obvious. But this is just a fun, I found it on Pinterest, a fun diagram that just shows, you know, the function of our feelings. And has anyone here seen Inside Out? Yeah, so good. Like, I nerded out so hard on that movie. I was like, yes. But I love that at the beginning, Joy is like going through all the different feelings, the four main feelings, and explaining what their jobs are. And then with sadness, she says, I don't really know what she's supposed to do here. She just kind of lays around. But then at the end, she realizes that sadness signals to others that you need support. And I was just crying in the theater. I was like, oh, yes, sadness has a purpose. So sadness... yeah, it may be because of a loss, and so we cry. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a little cut off. So then we reattach to the lost object, or we reattach elsewhere where we feel support. We get angry often when we face an obstacle, when something is in the way of our goal. So for me, my boss was in my way of me enjoying my vacation, and so I got angry. So we might say, like, perceive that as an enemy. So sometimes we can attack with our anger and to destroy the obstacle. And sometimes that anger is important because we do need to, like, face something really strongly. And if you ever get angry, you probably notice in your body, your muscles, you feel bigger and stronger when you get angry. And this is often why so many people, especially men, they may not express any other emotion but anger, because it does feel very powerful, whereas other emotions might feel really vulnerable. But anger in and of itself is not wrong. There are things that are worth getting angry about. It's how we express it that matters. You know, the Bible says, in your anger, do not sin. It doesn't say, don't be angry, that's sinful. It says, when you get angry, don't let it lead you to sin. And so anger in and of itself is not wrong. If we can, again, take responsibility for ourselves and notice the anger and maybe be curious about it, like what about this interaction is making me so angry? It can give us a lot of helpful information. And then if we're able to calm down and have a conversation that's respectful, like I did with my boss, you know, we can still destroy the obstacle, but it doesn't have to be an attack. So that's why anger is not a bad thing. It gets a bad rap, but don't just automatically throw it out. Because if you are angry, there's a reason you're angry. And it may be based on some false information, but it's still worth paying attention to. Fear, we get fearful when we perceive any kind of threat. So if you feel afraid, you know, there's a reason for that. And that brings me to, so this is why feelings are important. They can be great indicators that something is not quite right, that something that we're not okay with is going on. So in addition to our feelings, we need to be aware of our needs. So who is familiar with this diagram? Yeah, what is this?
It's a pyramid of what you need to have.
Uh-huh.
Basic.
Yes, yeah, and I heard some people saying Maslow. Yeah, so Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you're right, you're describing it beautifully, that at the bottom, these are our basic needs, and in order for us to care about these higher level needs, these basic needs need to get taken care of first. And so the basic needs are food, water, warmth, rest, shelter, you know, things that are basic for our survival. Next is safety. And I like to say that it's not just physical safety, but emotional safety as well. So again, if you're feeling fearful or angry, it may be that you don't feel safe emotionally or physically. And so being aware of what you need can also help you set boundaries. There are certain people throughout my life who I noticed I felt kind of nervous every time I was around them. And I was like, what is that? And then I realized, like, oh, they make comments that are kind of hurtful. And so I don't really feel emotionally safe around them. And so I realized I need to, when I'm in social settings, in order to enjoy myself and live my best life, I need to feel emotionally safe. And so the boundary could be, okay, I'm not gonna like invite that person out with my group because they just always say really negative things that are hurtful, or I don't feel safe sharing things because I know that I've heard that they've told other people what I've shared, so I can't trust them to keep what I share confidential. So that might be a way that I think through, okay, if I need safety, how can I get safety? I also had a time in my life where I set a boundary with my dad, and this was really, really hard, that when I visited, I'm from San Diego, that I wasn't going to stay in his house anymore because for a short time, he was having a really hard time that he would take it out on me. He would get very angry, explosively angry, and I didn't deserve it, but I was a great target for his blame and his anger. And so after multiple times of that happening, I said, you know, this isn't good for our relationship. And so I'm still gonna come down to San Diego, I'm still gonna visit you and spend time with you, but I'm not gonna stay in your house because I need to feel, if I'm here with you and I notice that you're starting to escalate and get angry and I hear your tone shift, I need to be able to say, I'm gonna leave because I don't feel safe. And I'll see you tomorrow, I love you, but I'm gonna go. And he did not like that. He was pretty angry about that. But I wasn't doing it to be manipulative. I wasn't doing it to guilt him. I was doing it because if I had just stuffed my feelings and stuffed my needs and stayed with him because I didn't wanna make him mad, my anxiety would just be through the roof every time I stayed with him. I wouldn't even enjoy that time with him. And again, I would become more and more resentful towards him. There would be more and more wounds that would be more for us to heal and recover from. So this is an example. Yesterday we talked about that initial separation for that deeper closeness. This is an example of that. I literally was separate from him. I didn't stay with him in his house, but it was to preserve our relationship. And that was a few years ago, and this last Christmas I stayed with him again for the first time, and it was great. My dad went through a lot of change, a lot of healing, and he doesn't have those rage attacks anymore. And so praise God. But he thanks me for holding that boundary. Initially, he threw everything at me. He called me names, he said, I was such a cruel daughter, how could I leave him like that? And it was hard. So just so you know, as I'm saying boundaries are hard, I am speaking from a place of, I get that. But what kept me able to ground myself in that was knowing, no, this is the best thing for our relationship. And I'm not doing this to be cruel. I'm doing it because I love him. So what helped me initially get to that point was acknowledging my need for safety. So again, being aware of your needs. And sometimes it's just here. I organize my day around what I need. I know after about 5 clients, I need a mental break. I get a little stupid after 5 clients. And so if I have a client who, you know, the only time they can come in is after that is during my break or something, I might have to think. There's sometimes when I'm like, okay, I do just need to push through. But in general, I'll try to set that boundary of, you know, after 4 or 5 clients, I need a break, even if it's just for a half hour, to clear my head, to eat something, to fuel my body. And again, it's not selfish for me to hold that space. I hold that space so that I can be a better therapist and so that my client at the end of the day isn't getting the crumbs, right? And so I have to acknowledge that I have a need for food, that I can't go 8 hours without eating anything and be at my best level. So also just being aware of those basic needs. And I have friends and clients who feel guilty for having needs. Often it's feeling guilty for having these kinds of needs, for needing, oh, you can all see my texts. What time are you off work, Ari? 5 o'clock. I'll let you know. You know, a lot of times people feel shame or guilt for having these needs, but I truly believe that God has wired us to need each other and for connection. In Genesis, you know, when God creates Adam and Eve, he says, it is not good for man to be alone. We're not meant to live in isolation. So it's okay to acknowledge that we need belonging, that we need friendships, that we need to feel safe, that we need food and water. That's just reality. If you want to deny that need, good luck. And then I also found this online, an updated version of Maslow, so that our most basic need is Wi-Fi, which I laugh, but I'm also like, oh, that's almost becoming true. So I laugh, but I'm also like, that's kind of scary. Ah. Okay, so those are feelings and needs. We also need to look at our priorities. And priorities are going to look different for everyone, right? And a lot of times we'll say, okay, my priorities, you know, first is my relationship with God, then my family, then my career. Usually those three are in the top 5 somewhere. And it's not wrong. I'm not here to judge if you're like, well, actually, you know, if you're honest, maybe you're like, at this point, because sometimes our priorities shift. Maybe because of where you're at in your career, maybe that's a little higher. Maybe, you know, your family is taking over your career or whatever. You might have other priorities. Church service, serving in your church, maybe that's above your career. Because maybe you have a job that kind of just pays the bills, but it's not really your passion. So where you get your passion filled is in your volunteer work. And so maybe that feels like a higher priority to you. So no judgment on what your priorities are. You just need to be clear for yourself on what they are, because that can also help inform where do you set boundaries, especially in terms of how you spend your time. And a lot of times we'll say, well, of course my family comes first, but then when we look at where our time goes, it's like, oh, but I stayed late at work every day this week, or I said yes to this responsibility at church that's going to take away from my weekend, and that's usually my time with my family. And so if I can think through, like, okay, well, what are the relationships that are most important to me that I need to nurture the most? What are the activities that matter most to me? Because, again, if I said yes to everything, then I don't enjoy it all. And I don't know about you, I'm really good at saying yes to everything because I have a lot of different interests. But when I say yes to too many things, I'm so overwhelmed that I don't enjoy any of it. So I've learned, right now, I'm at a time in my life where I really need to focus on my career and my private practice. And so, you know, I have my relationship with God that I do try to make a priority, but to be honest, sometimes if you look at my life, it may not appear that way based on how I use my time. And so I'm just being honest that it's not like I have my two-hour Bible study every morning and I'm so holy. But that is my intention, to really value that, to be in conversation with God throughout the day, to be in Scripture. And so then in terms of my relationships are really important to me. But not all of them are equally as important. So, you know, I have a lovely boyfriend who I love, and he's very important to me. And I have my best friend, who's like a sister to me. And then I have my dad and my sister in San Diego. And so, you know, I guard my time with them because it's very important to me. Because if I just kind of said yes to whoever asked me at any time, it's hard to guard that time with people. And another time when I taught boundaries, I did this exercise with these different cups that were all labeled different things, like work, social media, friends, church. And I had people go to this person who had a cup full of water, and he couldn't see what was on the cups, but I was like, your goal is to get as much of that water in your cup as possible. So they all stormed him and were like, I need water, I need water. And so he just poured the water wherever. And then we looked at, where did the water go? Where did your resources go? And so maybe it all went into like church and social media, and friends and work got nothing. And so if we're not clear on our priorities and where we need to put our time, energy, other resources first, we might just, you know, do the shotgun approach where we just throw it all out there. And then we might be left feeling kind of depleted, and not really giving to the places that matter most to us. So that's why our priorities are so important. So we've talked about our feelings, we've talked about our priorities, we've talked about our needs. So we also need to think about, what do I have control of and what do I not have control of? So this is another question that can be a really helpful framework. And again, yesterday we talked about our powerlessness and how that can be so painful and so difficult. And, you know, to be honest, even when people come to me and ask me questions and I know I can't give them this perfect answer tied up in a bow, or I can't fix them, my love can't rescue them, I often do feel that pain of like, I really just want to take away your pain. And I can't. And I hate it. I hate that I can't. And sometimes I will say that to people. I'll say, I wish I could take this pain away from you. But they know I can't, and I know I can't. So really being honest with ourselves on what we do have control over and what we don't can also be a really helpful way to decide where are there boundaries, where are there not. Because we need to set our boundaries, but we also need to respect other people's boundaries. If someone says, you know, I just want to, you know, I don't need help with this area of my life, but, you know, I really appreciate you being a listening ear, but I don't really need advice. I just kind of need a place to share. But you keep giving advice, you know, that's not really respecting their boundary, right? Maybe you're trying to control something that isn't in your control. And so some things that we do have control over: yourself, your words, what you choose to say, your attitude. So attitude is actually something that we do have some level of control over. Our moods, those can kind of just come up, and our moods change 1,000 times a day. Those are maybe a little less controllable, but still, we choose what we do with our feelings, right? So we have some control over that. We, you know, to some degree have control over what we wear in the morning, what we eat, what we do with our time. We can't control what other people think. We can't control what other people feel. And we can't control what other people do. And we can influence at times. We can share our thoughts, our opinions. But ultimately, we cannot make someone do something. You know, that's that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right? We can lead a person to water. We can share all this wonderful knowledge and truth with them, but they have to choose to take it in and do something with it. And sometimes it's really hard to determine, well, what do I have control of and what don't I? So I think I saw a hand up. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know everyone's here for different boundary things, and mm-hmm. how does the boundaries, and I'm hoping everyone, people sort of share this. Is with a teenage daughter, you know, I love them dearly, and like one daughter will ask me if they want to take something, and I have no problem, and I know I get it back, and it's in one piece. The other daughter, it's like she takes my clothes and my makeup, and I don't know it's gone, and I find it in her room all torn or stained or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I want to lock in a safe. I see that I'm constantly hiding things, and I hide things so much that mm-hmm. I don't know where to put it. And then it drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to control it better.
Yeah.
I don't know. So do you have any advice?
Well, I mean, you could. You could lock your stuff in a safe. Like, that's how you're going to keep it safe. And, you know, and you do have a right to... You know, if something, it's your personal property, you have a right to decide who can use it and who cannot. I think that's very appropriate. You should have a level of control. But they don't listen. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you feel disrespected, which then also leads you to feel what?
Well, it hurts. It's hurt and anger.
Yeah. Those two go together a lot.
Yeah,
hurt that your daughter doesn't seem to care how this affects you, and anger that you're not being respected. So the next thing I'm going to talk... Yeah.
My daughter gets it, and why this daughter just doesn't even...
Yep. Well, remember we said two kids... Two kids, same family, very different. Yeah. Well, the next thing I'm going to talk about might cover that a bit, and then we could maybe revisit that. But thank you for sharing. So sometimes, like I said, sometimes we just need to set our own boundaries in our hearts and just know it for ourselves. Sometimes we do need to verbalize it, and then sometimes we actually need to have actions to back it up, because sometimes we can tell someone, you know, I need you to not do this, please, but they're still going to do it because they think, oh, she wasn't really serious. And teenagers are the best at testing those boundaries. So our two-year-olds, toddlers and teenagers are basically the same. They're just bigger, like, for real. In human lifespan development, that's what they taught us. And so sometimes we can't just say it. We do need to actually follow through on it. But in how we say it, what we want to use is assertive communication. And sorry, I'm pulling up. I'm going between a Google Doc and a PowerPoint, so that's why I keep looking down. I'm sorry. Okay. So assertive communication, it's somewhere in between passive communication and aggressive communication. So aggressive is kind of giving the message of, I just care about myself and what I want. I don't care about you. And so this could be, you know, this goes into bullying territory. This goes into maybe even some verbal abuse, name calling. So to use your example, if you wanted to communicate aggressively with your daughter, you could say, you are being so selfish and spoiled and inconsiderate. You are this, you are that. I can't believe you would do that. That's aggressive. And your goal is just to get what you want, which is for her to stop taking your stuff and ruining it, which is not wrong for you to want that. But the way you're doing it is saying, I don't really care about your feelings. I don't care about your self-esteem. I just care about getting what I want. And while you may get the desired result, you probably won't feel that great about yourself. It usually doesn't feel too good when you're aggressive. And it can really damage that relationship. On the other end of the spectrum, there's passive, which the underlying message there is, I don't care about myself, I just care about you. I care more about keeping the peace and not making anyone angry than I do about my own needs and feelings. So this might look like just not saying anything. I'm just going to keep using your example because it's a good one, if that's all right with you. Is that okay? Okay, I want to respect that. Maybe it's just like, oh, well, I found my shirt on your floor and it's dirty. You know, I'll just go grab my stuff from your room and I'll wash and da-da-da. And you never say anything. That's the beginning, right? But then usually if we don't ever speak up for what we want or need, and we are passive, a lot of times, just all at once, it comes out like this. So maybe you've known people in your life where it's like they're a volcano and you don't know that something's brewing until there's the eruption. And those can be really uncomfortable people to be in relationship with because you never know when it's going to happen. So being passive isn't really the best thing for relationships either, because when we're not speaking up for what we need or want, or if we're not okay with something, again, usually we'll feel that anger and resentment. And if we don't address that, it can explode, or we might just go over to being passive aggressive, which is, I don't care about myself and I don't care about you. So this is where you're not really being direct, you're not verbalizing what's wrong, but you're not letting it go either. And if anyone doesn't know what passive aggressiveness is, you're very lucky to have never encountered it in your life. But you know, it's something where they're saying one thing, but maybe their tone indicates something else. Sarcasm can often be passive aggressive. And a lot of times people will say something that sounds kind of sharp and barbed. People will be like, oh, well, yeah, because I'm trying to think. No one's been passive aggressive with me in a while. So I'm like, that's nice, but I have to think about, like, I just, I had a friend whose mother left him a voicemail, and he hadn't called in a while, and she said, you know, just calling to see if you're still alive. Ooh, that doesn't feel good, right? Because most likely she's upset that he hasn't called, but she's not saying that. She's being passive aggressive, and when people are indirect in that way, it often leaves us feeling kind of confused and like, I don't really know how to respond to that because I don't have anything clear to respond to. And a lot of times when people say something like that, I might be like, hey, are you upset? And what do you think they say?
No.
No, I'm not upset. I'm just, you know, I just haven't heard from you in a while, you know, and it's like, okay. And so it's really hard to interact with that. So neither of these is really that helpful. So assertive, when you're communicating assertively, that's saying, I care about myself and what I need and want, but I also care about you and your feelings and what you need and want. And it's saying, this is really great in marriages, right? Because you need to meet each other where you are. It's great in any relationship, though. So it's saying, you can still acknowledge that something's not okay without bashing someone over the head verbally. So the example with your daughter, and I'm not saying that this is gonna fix it, I'm just using it as an example. You know, you state what is true. You state the facts. It's not your opinion, it's not your interpretation, it is just the facts, and it's amazing how often we confuse the facts with our interpretation of the event. So we really gotta be honest with ourselves. So the fact is, you know, there have been several times when you've borrowed things with me or from me without asking, and then I never get them back, and then later I find them on the floor of your room. A lot of times they've been damaged or dirty, and that's pretty frustrating for me. You can be honest, you can share how you feel about it, but you don't say, you made me angry, you did this. You say, this is what's happening and this is how I feel about it. And this is what I would like. So in the future, if you want to borrow my clothes or you want to borrow my stuff, I need you to ask me first, and then I need you to return it. And if it gets dirty, I need you to take responsibility and do that. And I know, I see you.
Because I've done all that. I've actually said, you don't like them, you don't even have to watch these. Just, sometimes if I'm not home, you can take it. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for it, or just lay it on my bed. I don't care if it's dirty, just lay it on my bed and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
But no, yeah. She doesn't do it.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying, I'm not saying this is going to fix your problem, I'm using you as my example. So that might be a time where it's like, okay, we've used our words, because absolutely, we can be assertive, we can be as direct and clear as possible. Just because we're assertive doesn't mean it's like a magic wand that's going to make that person change their behavior. Right? But we can know that, okay, I have been clear, I was respectful in how I set my boundaries. If they still do not respect those, then it might be going to, okay, how can I show them that this is my boundary. So actually taking some action with that. And I can't tell you what would be best in that, but it sounds like the words aren't enough.
And I've done the actions too.
Yeah. So you gotta find something different that actually shows her why that matters. Yeah. It could be a financial thing, like, well, this was damaged and I had to throw it out, so you need to buy me a new one. It could be, you know, again, I can't specifically prescribe the right boundary for each person in here, but finding what boundary makes sense for your situation, because it's not a one-size-fits-all. Yes?
We were foster parents for 7 years, and because of that, we had to lock up a lot of things that we never thought we would lock up. Cabinets, drawers, knives, any kind of clean things, you name it. Kids who have been through abuse sometimes have suicidal issues they have to deal with. So, you know, part of our job is to make sure that they stay safe, no matter what they're going through. Well, one of those things was we had to put a lock on our own bedroom door. For one thing, I had a gun that was locked in there. But it did help a lot because it made sure that they didn't get to our things either. Because you run into the same problem. I mean, it just gets to the point to where if you want your things safe, you need to make sure that they stay safe.
And you would
just put a lock on the door, keep a key, they can ask, and you can choose to let them use it. And then as long as they bring it back in proper order, and you don't have to lock the door again. But if they don't, it'll be locked. It's a good boundary.
For the last 2 years, I worked in a group home, so we had to do the same thing and lock. And the kids got so annoyed. They're like, oh, can I have this? Can I have a razor so I can shave? Yes. Like, but, you know, I didn't feel bad because, and when they would get annoyed, I'd be like, I know it's annoying. In your foster home or with your mom, you could have whatever you wanted whenever you wanted. Here, you weren't doing it to be restrictive and annoying. You were doing it to keep them safe, right? So again, that's a great example of where boundaries, they may feel restrictive, they may feel mean, but they weren't. It was out of love, and you're being very responsible. So thank you. Thank you for being responsible. So this is assertive communication. So this is a great place to start when you're setting boundaries, and sometimes this is enough, and sometimes it's not. Like I said with my my conversation with my boss, even after explaining to him, like, I'm not going to respond to texts after this time, he still texted me. So I had to show him that I meant it by not responding to his texts. And so, and that does get a little more tricky. And same thing with my dad. I told him, I don't feel safe when I stay with you, and I don't appreciate being talked to like this, and so I'm not going to stay with you. Oh, you bet every time I came to San Diego, he'd say, well, you know, you can stay here. And I would and it was so hard because then it's like, you're making me reopen the wound, Dad. Like, I don't like hurting your feelings. But so I would say, thank you. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to stay with my sister, or thank you. Like, I'd say, I appreciate that, and I know, and I'm going to do this. So you can say what your boundaries are. People may or may not respect them initially. So sometimes you do have to take it the step further. So also, when you communicate your boundaries, make sure it's something you can actually do. Don't make empty threats. and again, maybe take some time to really think about it. Because if you're doing it aggressively in anger, if you're saying, I'm never going to let you borrow anything ever again, that's probably not true. And then when you go back on that, you're just going to teach that person that you don't really mean what you say. So it's really good if you are feeling super angry, give yourself some time to chill out and maybe pray and say, God, what would be a reasonable boundary here that I can actually set and hold? And then communicate that. Because if you're just making those rash decisions, that's going to make it a lot harder. So I just like to show this because it's funny. But evolution of me. Yeah, sure, I'd love to. I'll check my diary, but it should be okay. Maybe, depends on work. Not sure, busy. Nope. And this might be many of us where we say yes to everything, even things that aren't asked of us, and we slowly, maybe we don't fully take responsibility yet, we blame it on other responsibilities, other things on our calendar, and then maybe we get to the point where we know it's okay to just not say yes to everything, to not take on other people's responsibilities. But yeah, it's a process. So I say this to cut yourself some slack as you're learning and growing in this. And a lot of times I won't realize that my boundary was crossed until afterwards. And that's okay. You can always revisit it. If it's with a person that you really care about your relationship with them, you can, like I did with my boss. It was the thing had already happened. The boundary violation had already happened. But I sat down with him, and we debriefed it, and it kept me from staying bitter, and it helped us communicate better so that it wouldn't happen again. So it's always okay to go back, or even for yourself, if you don't feel like you can talk to the person, to go through it with yourself and kind of replay how you would like it to go, how you wish you had handled that, because this is like a muscle that, you know, if you've never used it, it's not going to work very well. So I say that to encourage you that it is a process, and even though I teach on boundaries, there are times when I'm like, I totally let that person just like bulldoze me and totally take over my boundaries. So we get these new life situations, so what boundaries look like may change over time. And so, again, cut yourself some slack. Even if you're an expert, even if you write the book on boundaries, you still might have some trouble with it.
Mm-hmm. You realized after the fact.
It was, I think it was, I was still in line, but it was like after I had already done all the emails and texting. But yeah, it was in that moment. But I wish that I had realized it when he first texted me and that I had just said, hey, remember, I'm on vacation. I'm actually at Disneyland, so I can't do that for you. I wish that's what I had done. And so, yeah, I had already crossed my line. But it's okay, because we still talked about it, and he didn't do that to me anymore. So I'd like to close our time, because I notice we're just about out of time. When I was first learning to set boundaries and have a healthier relationships with people where I didn't take on things from them that weren't mine to take on, I prayed the Serenity Prayer every day. And it may not seem like, well, what does that actually, it may seem like, what does that actually do? But, you know, if we believe that God is who he says he is, when we pray and we set our sights on him and his truth, he does change us. And a lot of times, this is used in the 12-step community a lot, but they stop it about here. But the rest of it is beautiful. And if you want this, you can totally just Google full serenity prayer and it'll, you know, come out in all different designs, so you can choose whichever one you like. But I would love to just actually pray this over us to close. So yes, thank you. Amen is right. So let me pray for you all the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. Amen. So I pray that for you, that you have wisdom to know the difference, And that you experience some freedom and new life through setting some loving boundaries. So thank you for being here, and enjoy the rest of your days.
Thanks.